You're listening to Investify, preaching financial independence and assisting investors to achieve a more flexible and free lifestyle through smart financial planning and real estate investing. If leaving the corporate world and jumping into this thriving industry is what you desire, tune in and listen to stories of like-minded individuals who made the leap to financial independence.
What's going on, everybody? You are listening to Investify. My name is Craig Curlop, a.k.a. The Fi Guy, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Chad the Dad Rocky. What's up, Chad?
Hey, Craig. How you doing today?
I am doing fantastic. How are you?
Doing good. Let's see. We just got back from our cruise, so that was a good time.
Yeah, it was a really good time. You know what's crazy? Is I'm still like on a high from this, is on the last night of the cruise, my wife and I, Grace, we decided to go to the casino and she wanted to play the slot machines because she loves those. And I personally can't stand them. I like to play poker. And so we went and played poker. I was kind of teaching her how to play poker and all that kind of stuff. And on the third hand in, I was like, okay, you got to bet one up top, which is like in case you get something crazy and then you just kind of play the hand with the rest. And we always bet the minimums because we're not really big gamblers. We just kind of think it's fun. And I was like teaching her the rules and all that. And legitimately on her third hand, she gets a straight flush.
And that's insane. Just,
and like for those that don't know much about poker or whatever, I'm looking at like the probability odds. And this is a quick Google search, not really super verified. But the odds of getting a straight flush is one out of every 72,193 hands.
Oh, wow.
She got it on the third hand, right? But I'm just like, she didn't really even quite get how rare it is. And I was like, I've never even seen that. I don't play a ton of poker, but I've played enough where I've never even seen that before. And it was cool to play it in the casino and she won like $1,000, which is crazy when you think about those odds. If you've got a 1 in 72,000 chance of getting it and you only win $1,000 on a $35 bet, like, that's how casinos make their money right there.
Especially on cruise ships. Yeah.
Especially on cruise ships. Yeah.
Yeah, we came to look for you and you were already gone. I was confused of either it went really bad or really good really quickly.
we're of the mindset of like, once you win, we'll keep playing hands until we lose one hand. And then once we lose a hand, we're out. So we walk away. We're not ones to try to double that or try to do that again. So... But yeah, that was tons of fun. That was the Fi team trip. And so, you know, if you are on the Fi team and you're able to, you know, hit a certain level of production, then essentially you get a free fun trip. And so we were all there, and that's why, you know, that's why that story came to be.
Yeah, good time.
Yeah, it was fun, man. And speaking of fun, we got an interesting fun story for you today. So this one is actually, it's not quite about real estate. It is in a way, but we're talking about laundromats today. I met this guy a couple of months ago. He was up in our area and we were playing some disc golf and he's like the laundromat guy. He's got a community. He's got all this stuff. He's building the first laundromat fund. And so if you ever had interest in laundromats or owning real estate that laundromats are in, you know, this episode is definitely for you. And we talk in the beginning how he had to change his voice up a little bit with some particular customers he had. At the very end, he kind of discloses how the language he used because he kind of skirted over it in the beginning, and I didn't want him to get away with it without actually hearing, you know, hearing the talk. So, with that being said, let's bring on Mr. Jordan Berry.
This episode of Investify was brought to you by the Fi Team, a team of investor-friendly agents that service all 50 states. If you are looking to house hack, to invest, grow your portfolio, and want a true investor-friendly agent on your side, go to thefiteam.com and click get started. And we can't wait to have a good conversation with you.
Jordan Berry, welcome to the show, my friend. How are you doing today, dude?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me on, man. Appreciate it.
Good, man. Glad to have you here, man. I hope you're doing better than your disc golf game. That's for sure.
Oh, gosh. Man, yeah. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, but it was also a little bit embarrassing, if I'm honest.
Yeah. Not going to lie, I had like that game of disc. So for those that know, Jordan came up to the Spokane Coeur d'Alene area for an event, maybe like a couple months ago at this point. That moment, it hit me that like we can play disc golf in January or whenever you were here. Like I was like, this is awesome. And so because we've had a pretty mild winter, as I think most other places have. Anyway, we're not here to talk about disc golf. We're here to talk about your story, Jordan. So why don't you kick us off and tell us kind of, you know, where you were prior to this new journey and what kind of got you on this kick of financial independence and entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thankfully, we're not here to talk about disc golf because it'd be a very short conversation for me. So I'm in Southern California. I live here, my wife and a couple of kids. Yeah, I was a youth pastor and a pastor for about 15 years. And kind of towards the end of that, I started having my kids and they were young at the time. It was just time to kind of make a change from being in ministry vocationally for so long. But I had all my experience and I ended up getting a degree in, it switched from physics to ministry. So I had a degree in ministry and I had all my experience in ministry. And I was like, I don't know what to do with my life anymore. I don't know where to go. I don't know what to do. And so, you know, I kind of went into this like little like identity spiral crisis scenario where I was just trying to figure out, I was like, I felt like a kid, you know, trying to pick a major in college. Like the world is my oyster, but it's too many options. I don't know what to do. And so we actually had a family friend who was working a tech job in the San Francisco Bay Area. And he making good money, but working long hours. And he ended up buying a laundromat and he replaced his tech income with one laundromat and went from working 60 to 70 hours to 5 to 10 hours a week. And we were like, yeah, okay. Yeah, that sounds good. Let's do that. So we started this pursuit of laundromat and ended up finding one and buying one. And then everything went south after that. So that's kind of the overview, but yeah, that's how I got out of the rat race.
George, just for a little context, like what year, just a timeline of events here.
Yeah, so this was about a decade ago that I bought my first laundromat. So 2013, 2014.
And I got to ask, did you say you majored in physics ministry? Like, is
so that I majored one in thing? Physics. No.
Okay.
So I majored in
never
physics.
Heard of that.
Yeah. The physics of ministry. No. Yeah. I majored in physics, which I affectionately refer to as physiques, but it was physics. And then I had a year to go in physics and I actually ended up getting a part-time job as a youth pastor the end of my junior year. And I was like, this is awesome. And so I transferred colleges and changed my major to ministry from physics. So I have a degree in ministry, not physics.
Right. You have a degree exactly. In physiques.
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 I mean, you can only see, you know, neck up here, but I'm telling you, man.
Yeah. And I guess like what made you kind of like want to make the switch from ministry and pastoring to laundromat? Just kind of like there just wasn't money in it or?
It was more time. It was more time and energy and attention. And you know, when you're doing ministry is great and I loved it and I loved helping people, but a lot of times when you're dealing with people in ministry, you're dealing with people at their hardest times, which is great. It's great to be there, you know, for people during their difficult times, but you know, over time it wears on you. And I'd come home exhausted, not physically, but like emotionally, attention wise or whatever. And I have two young kids. I have like 3 or 4 year old and a 1 year old and a wife at home, right? And so it was just time. I was just kind of burning out, I think. Time to make mm-hmm. that change.
For sure. And so that was 2014. You saw a mentor, a friend of yours in San Francisco who had the laundromat, totally replaced his income, a tech income at that, so I suspect it was quite high. And so yeah. Tell us about your first, did you jump in right after that or what happened?
Yeah, so I did as much research as I could, although there wasn't a whole lot out there at the time on laundromats. And I started looking on all the websites and found a laundromat that I liked or thought I liked and reached out to the broker. The broker kind of showed me the laundromat and was like, they're having trouble with the landlord. And he's like, you know, I don't think this one's going to be, I don't think it's going to work out. The landlord's not cooperating, but I have this other one that you might be interested in. And that laundromat was actually the one that we bought. And it did not go well at all. It was definitely not the same Cinderella story as my buddy in the Bay Area.
And where was this at? I think SoCal, what area?
This laundromat was in, it's in a city called Montebello, which is right on the border of East LA. So it's a rough neighborhood. This was what we call a zombie mat, which is basically it's a fixer-upper laundromat. And it was, you know, the game plan going in was buy it. I bought it all cash. I think I paid $65,000 for it. And the plan was to come in and totally redo it, put all new machines in and do a full renovation, which I did do. And the broker told me, he basically sold me a Field of Dreams business model, you know, that if you build it, they will come. So I built it and some people came, but not enough to make it profitable. I lost a lot of money for a couple years. And, you know, it was actually really kind of traumatizing for me. And I was already in this like identity crisis here, but you know, there's this stat that floats around. To this day, I'm not sure where this stat comes from, but the stat says 95% of all laundromats are successful. And I was just kind of like looking around like, how in the world am I in the 5% of people who can't figure this easy business out? And I'm losing money left and right every single month. And I don't know what to do about it. So it was a rough road and not that Cinderella story that my buddy had.
So you bought it for $65,000, was in a rough neighborhood, and you redid it up. Did you overdo it? Like you just didn't get the return on the investment?
No, I didn't overdo it. A couple things happened. So number one is this laundromat was in much worse shape than I thought. So listen, I'm coming out of ministry. I knew nothing about business. I knew nothing about investing. I knew nothing about financial independence. None of those things were on my radar. I had no idea what I was doing. Okay. So when I went to buy this laundromat, I pretty much entirely relied on the broker. And it turned out the broker just was not, he just did not have my best interest in mind. And so he sold me this laundromat and we did essentially no due diligence on this thing. And he basically said, look, we know it's not making money. It's just breaking even. So we don't really need to do due diligence. We're going to put new machines in. So you're going to drive new business. So, you know, there's not a whole lot really to do. And I was like, oh yeah, okay, that makes sense. But it turned out it wasn't breaking even. It was losing a couple grand a month. And then when I added new machines, I did get some new customers, but I also got a new loan payment for these new machines. So I continued to lose money after that. But even beyond that, this is a rough neighborhood and this is an unattended laundromat. And which means nobody's there during the day. It was me for a long time, but then I finally hired somebody to come in and clean every day. But nobody was there most of the day. And so we had, what I found out was it had become gang territory. And so this gang would just hang out at the laundromat. And so people wouldn't come there. So I invested a ton of money into the laundromat. I don't think I overinvested, but I invested a lot of money into the laundromat, but I invested $0 in rehabbing the reputation of the laundromat. And so I literally was trying to learn business, literally fighting a gang. I've gotten literal fights with gang members, and I was losing money hand over foot. So it was just a rough road there. And then, you know, with money going out, I was like, I know I need to like get more people in, but I like turtled up. I didn't know how to market in a way that I knew money would come back. Like if I put it out there, I didn't know how to make sure it would come back. And so I didn't do any marketing or anything like that because I had all this money going out and I was scared to put more out, even though I pretty much had to in order to try to get more people in.
Your, mentor or friend in San Francisco, was that a true mentor where you could rely on his experience at that time? Or was he helping you or just more of like out of the picture?
No, I had some conversations with him, but his experience was just so different. He bought one. It was making a ton of money day one. And so he didn't really know what I was doing wrong or what to do differently or anything. And we weren't close. It's actually a friend of my wife's parents' son. My wife's parents' friend's son who bought it. So I only knew him sort of peripherally. So we had a few phone calls, but he really didn't know what was going wrong, what was going on.
So like in hindsight, what would you have done? I mean, maybe just don't buy the deal, but like, you know, if you did buy that deal, how would you have analyzed, how would you have caught it up front, you know, in the due diligence period?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I definitely would have done due diligence. That's, you know, seems really obvious. And probably to everybody listening here, it's really obvious, but I would have done some due diligence for sure. So I knew, I mean, you know, one of the difficulties about this business is great. And the reason I'm still kind of here and talking about laundromats and having laundromats and stuff is because you talk about financial independence. There is not too many investment strategies that are better than laundromats to get you there quickly because they're cash flow businesses, right? And so a laundromat, it should be cash flowing about 20 to 25% day one. That should be your ROI day one. And that's unleveraged. So if you add a loan on top of that, those returns can go up. So you can see how, you know, with 1 to 3 laundromats, probably 95% or more of Americans can replace their income. So it can be a super powerful tool, but most of them are also cash businesses, which means it can be very difficult to actually pinpoint how well that laundromat's doing if you don't know what you're doing during that due diligence period. And I didn't. And I relied on the one person who stood to gain from me buying that thing besides the owner, who just didn't have my best interest in mind. So due diligence would be one for sure. You know, for two, I came in, I was a pastor, right? And so I came in and the way that I communicated with people who were not supposed to be at the laundromat sounded something like, hey, no big deal that you're here, but you know, this is a business. So you can't be hanging out here. You know, it's just no big deal. But if you're doing laundry, you're welcome here. If not, no big deal, right? And listen, nobody's going to hear that and respect that in that neighborhood, right? Okay. So I had to learn how to communicate to people in a way that they understood. And so I would have, now I'll come out of the, you know, come out of the batter's box. I don't know. I'll come out of the cages with speaking in a way that they can hear what I'm saying and respect it. So that was another big part of it. And then I was sold the dream that, hey, laundromats are super easy. You just come once or twice a week to collect quarters and that's it. While they can be, you can set them up to be relatively passive, they're never going to be totally passive, right? Anytime you have people and you're dealing with people or machines, you're going to have problems. And with laundromats, you got a whole bunch of both. So there's going to be problems that come up, right? So I would just, you know, have my expectations shifted a little bit because I kind of came in, was like, all right, off to the races. Let's just start collecting money. And it just didn't work out that way.
Yeah, it's funny. I think a lot of people probably go into their first investments in that way. I would say laundromats are probably a little more risky, in my opinion. Just the clientele is a little bit more risky than, you know, maybe a typical real estate investment or something like that. But it sounds like there's more than just the financial piece of due diligence with these things. Like, do you have any sort of like framework for how would you go in and analyze a laundromat? Like,
yeah. So, I mean, on the financial side, really, you know, at least initially, all I'm looking for is 4 numbers on the financial side, right? So I'm looking for net income. That's sort of the cornerstone of the value of a laundromat, that net income, which again, can be easier said than actually determined. So I need net income. And then you're going to apply a multiple to that net income. The multiple is somewhere between 4 and 5 or 5.5, somewhere in there. And the other 3 numbers kind of help you determine where on that spectrum the multiple is. Okay. So the other 3 numbers are the age of the equipment, the rent amount, total rent amount, and the number of years left on the lease. So those 4 numbers can get you to the valuation of the laundromat. Beyond that, you know, depending on the neighborhood that you buy in, the clientele can be more risky. The one I bought, definitely the clientele is more risky than a lot of real estate investments. However, my experience was not typical. I don't want to like scare anybody off of it. It was not a typical experience, but you know, you can get them in rough neighborhoods and can be, you know, a little sketchy there.
I recently listened to a podcast, but just curious your thoughts on buying businesses that similar to the one you bought, where coming in and the idea is to, oh, you know, it's not making money right now, but there's value add opportunity versus buying a business that is making money right now.
Yeah. So you want my perspective on which one?
Yeah.
Yeah. So in my opinion, I mean, it depends on what your goal is and what your situation is, right? If you're a high income earner and you're looking to put your money somewhere where you're going to get a good return, I'd probably be looking for a turnkey, and I'd probably pay, you know, just top of the market price, that 5X or 5.5X for a nice laundromat that's got a long history of stable income in a decent neighborhood where you're not going to have too many problems and the good systems in place, right? But if you're looking to kind of grow your capital position, if you're looking to, you know, deploy a relatively small amount of capital and turn it into more capital quickly, then, you know, I think a fixer upper business or a business that's underperforming and turning it into a performing one could be a great way to go. However, you've got to know how to actually do that, right? And that can be easier said than done. I mean, that's a great situation where you can come in with somebody, you know, have a mentor or have a consultant or another owner or something like that, that can, you can model the business after. But, you know, there's a little more risk, obviously, if it's not making money right away, but it can be super lucrative and you can actually make a whole lot of money that way.
Do you find that a lot of people make a mistake when they buy their first property where they try to just find something that's like the cheapest? Do you see that often? And like maybe
talk
to
that? Yeah. So here's what's funny is it feels like if I go to buy like a, you know, $1 million laundromat versus a $150,000 laundromat, it feels like a lot more risk to purchase that $1 million laundromat because there's more capital at stake, right? And you're going to have a higher down payment and all that. However, what I've found is not always, but typically the higher the price point, the less risky the laundromat is because usually those businesses are pretty stable. They have a long history of cash flow that you can look back on and they've got good systems in place. A lot of times they're more or less automated. They've got good employees in place. Whereas the lower price point laundromats, I mean, they're a lower price point for a reason. They're not making as much money and the margins are a little bit lower. Even though you might still be getting the same 20 to 25% returns, there's a difference between making 10 grand a month and 500 a month, right, on those same returns. So yeah, definitely can be riskier to buy the cheaper laundromats. And also a lot of times, those cheaper laundromats are in rougher neighborhoods. So there's that aspect of it too.
I guess just getting back to your story then. So you bought that first one. What happened next?
Yeah. So I redid it all, put new machines in there, renovated the place, new flooring, folding tables. I ripped down the mismatched wood paneling on the walls and found 40-year-old wallpaper underneath it and had to get that off and paint it. So I did all that stuff. And sat back and waited for the money to start rolling in. It didn't. So I started to panic, was trying to figure out how to get myself out of that situation. And, you know, because I turtled up, because I didn't invest in any rehabbing my reputation of that laundromat, it took a couple years for that thing to actually get into the black and to start making money. And what it took was enough time of running the business right for people to start to see that it was a safe place to go again, that it was nice enough to go to, that it was clean. You know, those things that are important to, you know, families who are trying to come clean their clothes. They want to be safe. They want their clothes to actually be clean. They don't want to come to a dirty place to wash their clothes. There's something to be said about word of mouth, but the downside of word of mouth is that it can be a slow process. Right. So it was just a slow process of word of mouth kind of trickling through the community and people starting to kind of come and check things out before it finally started to turn around. But even before that, I started to see the power in laundromats and where, you know, that cash flow could actually be a big difference maker in my life and in a lot of people's lives.
So you kept it. You didn't sell it after losing money a couple of years.
Yeah, no, I only just sold it recently.
Wow. Yeah. Okay.
8 or 9 years, I think.
So after this experience, like it sounds like you may have purchased more, but I'd love to hear, you know, what's kind of next for you. But like, what got you to kind of keep going? Usually when someone has a bad experience, they leave.
Yeah. So listen, I would love to sit here and be like, you know, I just had the grit and I just decided to make it happen. And kind of a little bit, that was the case. But the other side of it, and probably more to the core of it, was I really didn't know how to get out of it because I had invested this money. So I bought the laundromat cash, but you can 100% finance equipment, which is what I did. And so I had, I don't remember how much exactly was, you know, a couple $100,000 worth of equipment in there. And it really wasn't, it was losing money. So it really wasn't worth that much money. So I really just didn't know how to get out of it was the main thing. And so I just was just desperately trying to figure out how to make it work because I didn't know how to just stop without, I guess, declaring bankruptcy, which I didn't want to do. So no big hero story there. Just a coward who didn't know how to get out of his business. So he just made it work anyways.
I love that. I appreciate the like vulnerability and the humility there, right? Because I think a lot of people would say, oh, I foresaw the future and knew the potential. And but sometimes it's like, that's it, man. Like even with real estate too, it's like, you know, we Chad and I talked to a guy yesterday who's having a little bit of trouble filling his rooms. And I think he's not going to have a problem with it after once we get into springtime. But he was like thinking about selling it. I'm like, dude, don't sell it because you're going to lose money, right? Like you're going to lose, you're going to pay the realtor 6%. Like in the property has not appreciated 6% in 3 months. You know, when you're in that place, you're just like, dude, just figure out and make it work. And then by the time that you would actually make money from a sale, I bet you'd probably figure out how to make it work just as a cash flow from a cash flow basis. And so what does your next one look like, Jordan?
Yeah. So what I found, what's interesting about, you know, this business, well, there's a lot of things that are interesting for this weird little niche that I'm in over here. But one of those things is that kind of once you get your foot in the door, like a lot of things open up for you. So here I am, I sort of half joke, but it's not really a joke. I'm over here being the world's worst laundromat owner. And because I own one, all these doors open up. So deals kind of started coming to me and financing options started coming to me. So I got another deal that kind of came and dropped in my lap not too long after that first one.
I feel like there's something to that of really any industry. I kind of had the same experience of getting into real estate of just want to learn a thing or two. But then when you're the boots on the ground, you start networking, like deals just find you and then you partner up with people and you can't really explain it, right? I think you have the kind of the same experience. You can't explain it, but it's just working hard and being ingrained. Things kind of just snowball and happen.
I mean, deals beget deals for sure, right? And it's almost like your first deal, you almost just have to do it to just show the industry and show the market that you're willing to take action and you're willing to do it, right? And so like, don't try to hit a home run on your first deal, right? Go out there, hit a single, just do something, learn a whole bunch, make some good connections, and that way you can get the next one going. But yeah, I think a lot of people just get stuck in analysis paralysis because they're looking for the best deal on the first one. And they think they're smart by waiting and being patient because they hear Warren Buffett talking about being patient and all this stuff. But it's like, dude, you're not Warren Buffett, right? Like Warren Buffett probably wasn't patient on his first investment back in 1941, right? So like, I think there's a true lesson there where it's just like, just take action.
Yeah, no, I'm a huge fan of getting a base hit on that first one and just make sure it's solid, right? Talk about Buffett, isn't it Buffett who's like, just don't lose money? you know, like that's the best investment strategy, just don't lose money. Here I'm over here throwing money into the fireplace over here. But that's why I think just a base hit, and especially with a laundromat, right? A base hit deal is a 20% return on your money unleveraged, right? That's a pretty dang good deal for a base hit. And you don't need to hit a home run if you're making 20% on your money. You know, get that first one under your belt. But anyways, I was not doing any of that. I was losing money, but it didn't matter because I had my foot in the door and people saw me as someone who, maybe they saw me as a sucker who they could sell a laundromat to. I don't know, but but a deal fell in my lap. It was in LA and it was a laundromat with the real estate, which is pretty hard to come by. But it was a seller finance deal. And, you know, one of the cool things about laundromats is, you know, in real estate, so I own real estate too. And I love real estate investing, maybe even more than laundromats sometimes. But in real estate investing, there's like seller financing is like the unicorn, the mythical unicorn everybody's looking for, right? And in laundromats, they're actually, seller finance deals are actually fairly common, but it it's also a double-edged sword, so you got to be a little careful. The reason they're fairly common is because they're cash businesses, and a lot of times the banks won't lend on them because the books aren't matching up with taxes and bank statements. So that's where you can get in trouble, and be careful during that due diligence. But I got an off-market seller finance deal dropped in my lap for laundromat and real estate, and I ended up buying that deal and taking over that second laundromat there. And that was what was great about that one was not only was it seller financed, but that real estate, I mean, real estate in Southern California has just kind of gone through the roof. So that ended up being a really good, really good deal, much better. Although initially it was not a good deal because the day we closed, a brand new larger 24-hour laundromat opened like a half a mile away. So initially, I lost like 40% of my business like day one initially. It took some time for it to trickle back. But that was like a punch in the gut after my other experience that I had. So that was a rough one.
So this guy owned the real estate and the laundromat free and clear then?
Yeah, it was a lady, but yeah.
A lady. Okay. And so how did you structure that deal?
This was like 6 or 7 years ago. So I'm going to try to remember exactly what it was. But we did a, let's see, the total purchase price was $750. We did $200 for the laundromat and $550 for the real estate. I put down $100 on the laundromat and $50 on the real estate. And then we did a 7-year loan amortized over 25 years at like 6 or 7% or something like that.
Okay. So then it sounds like that loan is coming due here shortly. So have you paid her off or?
Just refinanced. Yeah.
Refinanced. So then the bank was then able to lend on it because you had I suspect you kept better books and whatever, so you could actually lend on it.
Yeah. This industry is kind of notorious for being a little sketchy with their books, but I'm actually a big advocate and proponent of keeping clean books because number one, you know, keeps yourself out of trouble. But for two, there's a lot of tax benefits with laundromats, you know, aside from the cash flow, you know, you get a lot of tax benefits, you know, from owning a laundromat too. So you don't really even need to, I don't think you need to skim money off the top or anything like that. And anything that's financeable is going to be more valuable, you know, when it comes time to refinance or sell. And so I just think it makes all the sense in the world to just keep clean books. And with an equipment heavy business like a laundromat, you know, if I just buy some new equipment every year, you know, depreciation wise, my taxes are slim to none, you know, legally every year.
Is it worth it to like replace equipment every year? Like, does that kill a lot of your cash flow?
It depends on your laundromat and your business. I mean, you know, when you have multiple, there's usually probably something you can replace. But, you know, like for my first one, I replaced all the equipment right up front. So it was going to be 15 years, you know, until that equipment needed to be replaced. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't have been really worth it. I try to make some big purchase every year that I can depreciate, either for the laundromats or real estate.
Gotcha. That's awesome, man.
We hope this episode is inspiring you to take action. If you're thinking about becoming a real estate agent or an agent who wants to join an investor-friendly team, just hit me up on Instagram at the Fi Guy, because we are growing our team in Denver, Seattle, San Diego, and Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, but also adding to our network in all 50 states. And if you didn't already know this, the Fi team provides a super supportive environment with one-on-one coaching, accountability, and ongoing training to help develop kick-ass, rock star, investor-friendly real estate agents. So hit me up on Instagram, at the Fi Guy, and we'll set up a time to chat. Can't wait to chat with you.
So you did your first couple. It sounds like you kind of learned all your lessons in the first one. The second one seemed to have been a lot more successful. You kind of got your due diligence framework set. How have you gone to scale?
So I bought two others since then, but the big thing that So I started a podcast, and because I was like, hey, listen, you know, I started a, you know, a blog trying to just share the lessons I learned, very expensive lessons that I learned with anybody else who maybe needed to learn them too, not the way I learned them. And then I started a YouTube channel. And then I was like, you know, if I really want to help people, I'm not the answer guy. at one point in time, I was the world's worst laundromat owner. So I'm not the answer guy, right? So I should start talking to people who are killing it in this business. So that's why I started the podcast and started interviewing owners who were doing awesome in this industry and learning how they're doing it. And, you know, a couple big shifts for me were the people who were doing it at any kind of scale thought differently than the people who had onesie twosies, right? They're thinking more about systems, automation, leveraging people, leveraging technology to help them manage multiple laundromats. And, you know, the other kind of big shift, I guess, for me is, you know, when I started that podcast, it really opened a lot of, I mean, you guys probably understand this, like it opened a lot of doors for me. I met a lot of different people who were wanting to do a lot of different things. And so, you know, from that is sprouting a fund where, you know, the plan is to go out and buy bunches of these things and utilize, you know, some of the new technology that's in our industry to help us to be able to do that, where not really many people have leveraged large portfolios in this industry yet, because it's mostly been a mom and pop industry.
If I recently had someone come to me, but this would be a good question for you. If someone would come to you today and say, I want to buy a laundromat, what advice would you give them?
So I'd probably ask them why they want to buy a laundromat, right? And see kind of what their expectations are. I want to make sure their expectations are matching up to what reality is going to be like. If they think, like I thought, that it was going to be super easy and I'm coming in once a week to collect quarters, that's what I thought. That's what I was told. It's probably not going to be that, at least not initially for a while, until you can get the right people and the right systems in place. So I'd want to know kind of what their end goal was, or what their, you know, the goal of buying the laundromat is. If the expectations kind of match up, then, you know, I'd say, hey, listen, here's the basics of it. You got to go out and find a laundromat. You've got to analyze, go get those four numbers I talked about, the net income, the age of the equipment, a rent amount, and the number of years left on the lease. Let's determine a value for it. Let's get it under contract, then we'll start the due diligence process. I recommend, you know, if you're buying your first laundromat, if it's a cash laundromat, it doesn't have a card system, it's just coins, I just recommend having somebody along the process with you who has experience in the industry, because there's so many gotchas. So many ways you can go wrong with this, where somebody can be hiding expenses or inflating income, where if you buy it wrong, that's where you go wrong in this business. So have somebody with you going through that first one, and then you'll be good to go.
Yeah, that's great. We kind of said the same thing of just, you know, real estate properties, but surrounding yourself with the team. It's all about building your team. And it sounds like that translates well to the same thing you're saying.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Yeah. And so, like, I guess just, I mean, okay, this is more of my curiosity. Outside of just having someone take you for the ride, like, how do you reconcile a cash business?
Here's kind of how I look at it. Okay. So when a seller says how much money they're making, right? Usually on the high end, it's what they tell you they're making. And on the low end, it's what they tell the government they're making on their taxes. And the truth usually is somewhere in the middle there, right? So we have this range. And the goal is to take this range and shrink it down as much as possible to get as precise as possible number as you can. You know, we're looking for how this business is performing. Cash business, a lot of times you're not going to know exactly how it's performing until you take over. But we want to get as close an idea as possible. So the way I approach it is doing what I call an income verification stack. So there's various different techniques to verify the income of a laundromat. And what I do with, like, consulting clients, for example, is I'll take them through, you know, three or four different ways to verify income. And then we just kind of layer them on top of each other. And we're looking for anomalies. We're looking for anything that's not matching up, anything that's standing out, anything that looks weird. And if we find something, then we just want to dig into that a little bit more and try to get some answers. So for example, you know, we want to do a coin count where we go in with the owner for a series of coin collections where we collect the coins, you know, together, and we see how much money came in, and we get an average per day, and we extrapolate that out and see how does that number match up with what the seller says. It's not perfect because, you know, sellers have done what I call salting the mines. It's where they come in the middle of the night and add quarters to those coin boxes. So how do you know? So what we do is when we do those collections, we take a water meter reading, right? And so we see how much water was used during that same time period, and we match that up to past water bills to make sure that's matching up. But that's not perfect either, because they could do phantom washes where they just put money in and run empty loads of laundry. So you're like, dang it, right? So another thing you can do is ask for access to the camera system so you can deter that stuff or find it if it's happening. Another thing you can do is do what's called a water analysis, and you take past water bills and you actually use the water bills and you back into an income amount based on how much water the washing machines use and how much water is used over a month. You can get a pretty good picture of how much money actually came in based on that water usage.
I can see why having a mentor, I mean, I would have never thought of any of those things. Going into it like you, of your first one, you just kind of, all right, sounds good. But yeah, I mean, that's amazing of just talking to you, learn a lot about it.
Yeah, well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's easy to go wrong here. There's a lot of good brokers that I'm sure would not have done what this one did to me. But you always got to remember kind of where, you know, I'm a broker here in Southern California. So in California in general, I feel like I can say this because I fall in this category, but you just got to remember where everybody's interests lie, right? And if it's a broker, they only get paid if you buy the deal. So their job is to sell the deal. You know, a consultant or a mentor or something like that is more incentivized to actually give you the information you need to make the best decision for you than a broker a lot of times. Not to say that a broker can't be a good teammate, because they can be and are sometimes, but you just got to remember kind of where everybody's interests lie.
100%. And that applies for real estate too. That's why you've got to really find a broker and find the people that trust, that anyone that's forcing you into a deal, that's really trying to convince you. There's a kind of difference between like a mentor and like that, and when you need kind of like a nice push to do a good deal, and someone that's been trying to make you buy a bad deal. Right. And I think you should be able to kind of sniff that, because I've done my fair share of like, dude, this is a good deal. You're just scared. We need you to, you know, in a nicer way, of course. Right. We need like, and a good mentor will do that.
Quit being a pansy. Just buy the deal.
Yeah, exactly. But when they're constantly like, when every deal that you bring them is a great deal and they never say no, or you walk into every single house or every single laundromat and they're like trying to tout it and be like, yeah, this deal is amazing. That's a red flag. Right. Cause most deals aren't amazing. You want the guy that's going to say, no, 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 this is the one.
Yeah. And it's a matter of finding that person, right? Whether it's real estate, laundromats, whatever. Chad, you're talking about earlier about your team, right? You got to find that person. But in laundromats, the one thing that might be a little bit different is most times deals that go through brokers or agents are double-ended. So they'll represent both the buyer and the seller. So a lot of times on the broker side, you're pretty limited on who you work with. You don't have necessarily a lot of times a buyer's broker representative that's helping you find those deals. So you got to find the deals and work with whoever has the deal, right? And so that's why there's an extra sort of benefit in this, you know, in this particular scenario, to have that third party, like a consultant, another owner, a mentor, somebody like that, that can help go through that with you, because the broker is representing both sides in most transactions for laundromats.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's great. See, I would never known that, right? And so that's why the due diligence is so important. Surrounding yourself with a community of people that also own laundromats is really important. Jordan, like, is there a spot out there where people can easily find other laundromat owners?
Yeah. Well, so laundromatresource.com, that's the site that I run. We've got a community over there. We've got a forum that's free. There's Facebook groups out there for laundromat owners and people interested in laundromats. So go check those out too. But yeah, those are some of the best places. I think maybe there's a subreddit on Reddit or something, but you know, there's places to find other owners.
Find the people, go talk to them, interview them, take them out to coffee.
Yeah. Listen to the podcast. That's a good way to hang out with other owners. Right.
Yeah, there you go.
Are you finding more and more laundromats for sale more recently? Have you seen any notice? I just hear kind of podcasts and reading of people are retiring and there's more businesses for sale today than there has been in the past. Do you find that true?
Yeah, I keep hearing that too. All these boomers are retiring and like 12% of them own businesses. I don't know. Apparently they don't own laundromats. Because no, I mean, I think we're we're seeing kind of what real estate has been seeing, or at least until semi-recently, where prices have been driven up and inventory is just low. Demand is higher than ever. You know, you've got people like Cody Sanchez, you've got like Brandon Schlichter, who's Investment Joy. I think he was maybe the original quarter collecting guy that introduced a lot of people to laundromats on YouTube and TikTok. Some of those people have kind of raised the profiles of laundromats. So there's more interest in laundromats than ever, but there's not a lot of deals out there right now, not a lot of laundromats for sale. So part of the reason for that, though, is they're pretty stable businesses. They're what I call habitual businesses or rhythmic businesses, right? So the income is pretty predictable. People usually are like, yeah, I do my laundry on Saturday mornings every single week or every other week or whatever, right? It's just this rhythm, this habit that they get into. And so, you know, once you kind of get them set up, I don't want to say they run themselves because it's not that easy, but it's, like I said, it's, you can get it pretty heavy on the passive side of the scale. And so, you know, even when you're older, there's not a lot of incentive to sell them because they're just printing money for you.
Yeah. Usually when people sell, they're selling problems, mm-hmm. right? And so then that's kind of where the investor comes in, solve the problem, write the asset, and then get it going. Jordan, like, I guess, where does your portfolio stand now? How much income are you getting from it? If you don't mind sharing that, just so people can kind of understand what the possibility is if they wanted to venture down this path.
Yeah. So what's funny is that you're catching me at a weird moment here. So I've sold all but one of my laundromats. So net wise, I'm probably at like $8,000 or $9,000 a month from that one laundromat. But the reason that I'm selling is because I'm putting together that fund and I am trying to go real big, real, real big. So the goal is a 9-figure laundromat portfolio, which has never been done, but that's the goal.
Tell us more about this fund and like you create a fund. Is it kind of like a REIT, but for laundromats?
No, it's like a real estate fund where, you know, people will buy in with, you know, they'll get equity and cash flow and tax advantages, all the above. And our goal is to go out and, you know, purchase a portfolio of laundromats in a few markets and then expand the portfolio from there by buying competitors and maybe building a little, but that's not going to be the primary strategy. It'll be acquisition. And so the goal is to kind of put together that portfolio and go out and buy 300 plus laundromats and stabilize them all and get them all operating and then make an exit after 5 to 7 years.
Craig, we got to make a note to get Jordan on in a year.
Yeah.
Hear the update.
Yeah, I definitely want to kind of see this laundromat fund through. I think that's a super cool idea. And like, you know, you kind of just talked about how like you kind of need to know the neighborhood so you don't end up in a gang area. Like, how are you able to do that across so many different cities where like laundromats aren't usually in A-class areas? Maybe I'm wrong, but at least in my experience.
Yeah, no, I mean, typically they're not. Yeah, you're right. What I've learned is there's a lot more that goes into due diligence than just taking your broker's word for it, right? So, you know, so we're going to do things like look at the demographics of the cities and towns that these laundromats will be in. We want to know typical demographics for self-serve laundromat. We haven't even talked about the service side, which is drop-off laundry or pickup and delivery, which is booming right now. But the demographic for self-serve laundry is below median income. It's renter demographic, households, you know, that have kids probably. Larger the household, average household size, the better, typically. And so we're going to look at that kind of stuff. We're going to look at crime rates, stuff like that. So similar to what you do with real estate investing, you know, we want to look at job markets to make sure there's not one industry heavily represented in a market where if that goes, everything goes kind of thing. Same that you would do with real estate. So a lot of those kind of similar things. We'd want to know that if we're buying a portfolio, then it's probably going to have a team in place. We want to vet that team also and kind of get their take on the area and of the laundromats.
I love it. So, okay, one last question about this whole asset class in general. Typically, like I won't say always, but typically, when you've got a good cash flowing asset, the appreciation is kind of sacrificed, maybe, right? And vice versa. And I find that in a lot of different asset classes. Mm-hmm. Does that hold true for laundromats too? Like, do laundromats not appreciate as much because they're such good cash flow?
Yeah. So if you think the easiest way to kind of think about it is laundromats are valued on a multiple So, you know, let's take a 5 multiple for the laundromat. If we, the multiple is a inversion of a cap rate, right? So if we think commercial real estate, it's valued on a cap rate. So, you know, something like if you're here in LA, you know, it's like a 3 to 5 cap in some of these retail places, but you know, a 5 cap would be what a 20x multiple for the real estate, right? So a 5x versus a 20x. So, and it's based on the net income also of the commercial real estate. So, you know, if you make $100 extra a year in commercial real estate, the value is going to go up 20x that. So it's going to go up $2,000, right? If you make $100 extra a year in a laundromat, it's going to go up 5x that. So it's going to be $500. So it's not going to appreciate as quickly as real estate. And that's where I think, what I think is interesting about laundromats is, you know, we're talking about financial independence. Laundromats are a great way to get that, because a lot of times we're talking cash flow initially, right? And so I am a huge fan. Like I said, I love real estate investing. So I'm a huge fan of hit that financial independence number, that financial freedom number with something like a laundromat, and then start funneling that money into real estate and start building, you know, that equity and that wealth, that long-term wealth.
Yeah. I think it's funny how there's kind of two ways to look at that equation. And I've kind of come at it from both perspectives of, like, it's almost like what comes first, the chicken or the egg. Like, do you buy cash flowing properties first and you kind of like, you know, you kind of just inch your way closer and closer to financial independence by buying $1,000 of cash flow every year? Or do you buy something that appreciates $300,000-$400,000 and then in 3 or 4 years reposition it into something that's really high cash flow? Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know what's quicker. I think I know which one is safer, right? But I think, like, yeah, I don't really have an answer for you. I think it's whatever appetite. I just think it's like whatever city you're in. Like, if your city is more of a cash flow type city, keep piling on houses until you hit financial independence. If you're in a more appreciation type city, buy a few, let them appreciate, then go reposition to a cash flow city, right? I think that's like where my head is at with investing.
Yeah, no, and I love that, those two different ways. And right, there's the horrible expression, right? No one way to skin a cat, you know, no right way to skin a cat. Like, there's different ways that you can approach it. And that's what I love about, you know, something like real estate and something like laundromats is you can actually do both. And, you know, in my opinion, the big wealth accelerator is if you get both the real estate and the laundromat, the real estate that the laundromat's in, then you can do some fun things like signing a lease between the two and charging top of the market rents and forcing appreciation in that real estate just by moving money from one entity to another, right? Create a triple net lease where the laundromat's paying all the expenses so the net income is maximized in that real estate, and you can really skyrocket equity in that real estate. And all you're doing is moving cash from your business to your real estate, and it stays in your pocket either way, but you force a lot of equity there. So why choose one or the other? Let's just do both. How about that?
Do both. Yeah. So if you were to sell something like that, I guess it would make sense because the real estate's effectively 20x and that's 5x. So you want to be multiplying the highest at 20x. So there is a difference, right?
Yeah, it's a big difference. So you actually end up devaluing your business a little bit, which is a bummer, but the appreciation you get in the real estate is just significantly more. It makes sense in the world to do that.
Cool. Awesome, Jordan. This has been an amazing time, man. And we've had tons of fun chatting with you. And we got to head into the final part of our show because we promised you'd be around an hour. Even though I could talk to you all day about this stuff. And so any last words of wisdom you want to give to the listeners before we head on to the final part of the show?
Yeah. So, I mean, the last thing that I would say is, listen, you're here listening to this podcast right now. Not necessarily even just this episode, but this podcast. You are wasting your time if you don't take some action. Like the actual, call these guys up, right? And buy a deal. Like, the action is the only thing that helps us achieve whatever your goal is. Taking action is the only thing that's going to get you there. So give yourself a little bit of time to do research if you're still in that research phase, but it's real easy to get caught in that research loop. So give yourself a set amount of time, a month, 3 months, whatever it is, and then take some action. Otherwise, what are you listening for? Right? Get out there and get the financial independence. Don't listen to other people talk about their financial independence.
Totally. I love that, man. Amen to that. All right, Chad, you know what time it is?
I do.
It's time for the
final four.
All right, bro, kick us off.
All right, Jordan, what book are you currently reading?
Ooh, I just started reading. Actually, it's right here. The Road Less Stupid. Have you guys read that one yet?
No, but I've heard good things. No. What do you think so far?
It's good, man. It's all about like asking yourself good questions and then actually spending time to think about them and to answer them thoroughly. And it's good. I'm like halfway through, but it's good. I probably should sit and do more thinking. That's my big takeaway so far. Counter to my previous lecture that was like, get out there and do stuff. Do it. I got to do more thinking. So think, I don't know. Do whatever you want with that.
Yeah. Think on your way to doing it while you're in the car.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the best piece of advice you've ever received?
Best piece of advice I ever received. Actually, best piece of advice I ever received was probably from my mom, who told me, like, when I was in high school, she told me to treat everybody like they were somebody special. And she said that because this girl asked me to a dance that I really did not want to go to the dance with her. And my mom kind of talked me into going with her, which I think, you know, she's being a little shifty on that one. But that advice has really kind of stuck with me. And it really kind of helps me, especially when I'm dealing with somebody who's difficult, to have a little more empathy with them and to try to understand where they're coming from or why they're feeling the way they are, if they're like angry or frustrated or whatever, before I respond. And, you know, just treating people, you know, like they're someone special has only ever just paid off for me in big ways. And it's never diminished me by making other people feel like they're a big deal.
Even the gangsters at the laundromat?
I'll be honest, man. I had some struggles there with that one. So I tried early on. Yes. Early on. Yes. But you can only push me so far. You know what I mean?
Do you have like a gangster voice or something? Or like you said, you talked like them. Like, can you like role play with her?
It's less like a voice, but it's more like, instead of, hey, listen, you can't be hanging out here if you're not doing laundry. It's like, get the hell out of here now. I'm calling the cops. You know what I mean? It's like, you just gotta you gotta have some authority and just be, you know, like you mean it.
More strict. Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. I wasn't sure if you like, started using different words or,
nobody gonna be intimidated by my voice.
Yeah. Get you and your punk ass over there, whatever, you know.
You see this physique? I majored in physiques. Come on. I majored in physiques.
Awesome, man.
Second to last question. What is your why?
That's a good question. And, you know, I'm like so why driven. It's kind of funny and kind of sad sometimes. Like, if I lose track of my why, I like spiral real fast. But my why is, I mean, genuinely, it's my kids and everything that I'm doing. Like, even what got me through some of those difficult times was like, okay, this is what I was telling myself. Like, okay, I'm losing money. I'm failing at this business, but I'm going to learn. I'm going to learn things that I can pass on to my kids, and I'm going to be the one that takes the hits to learn the lessons so that my kids can succeed, if nothing else, right? Like, I want to make sure these guys are set up for, you know, a successful life, whatever that looks like for them. It's just a happy life. I want them to have a good, happy life where they are contributing. You know, we have a rule in our house where you can't just be a consumer. You also have to contribute. So they can't just watch YouTube or play video games. They've got to have their own little way that they're contributing, right? So my son had like a little art website that he built for a little while, and my daughter has a YouTube channel. And so they've got to be kind of contributing. So I want them to be successful. I want them to be financially successful, but also just kind of successful humans. And so my why is like, I want to live as big a life as I can for myself. Yes, but also so that my kid can live a big life also.
I love that, man. I think that's big. Your kids are obviously, you know, they're sponges. So they look after dad more than you think, I'm sure. Okay, last question. If you had to lose your hands or your feet, which would you choose?
That's jacked up, man. Why'd you ask me that? I had to lose my feet.
You were one of the tough questions.
I probably lose my feet, I think. I feel like I could still be mobile. Could I get one of those like springy feet?
Springy feet?
You know what I'm talking about? Like the, you know,
like a kangaroo?
Yeah, they like lose their legs, you know, and they get the ones that are like the rounded springy thing. Like, you know what I'm talking about?
You know, I don't have any. Yeah. I would say you have to lose your feet. So I suspect that having a fake prosthetic. That's the word I was. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all right. I don't know. All I got is the question. So I don't got the details of it. So
I'd for sure go with feet if I could have one of those sick prosthetics, because I think you get faster with those even. So yeah, I'd for sure do that. But also, even if I just had to be in a wheelchair, I think I'd still probably lose my feet. I just feel like I'd lose so much more losing my hands.
Yeah, I would agree with that. There's a lot of dexterity. You do a lot more with your hands than with your feet. Yeah. But you recognize what you do with your hands, and you don't recognize what you do with your feet.
That's true.
Like, you don't realize your toes are touching right now until you start thinking about your toes touching.
It's like
and now everyone's like, holy crap, my toes are touching.
I know. It's like it's like your back, right? You never think about your back until your back hurts. And you're like, I use my back for everything. Like everything, right? Yeah. It's like that.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. Awesome. All right, Jordan. Well, luckily you've got all your hands and all your feet. We're not going to come chop them off. Okay. But if people
I'll be ready for you, though.
Yeah.
I know people
now. With his gangster voice, too. So I wouldn't get too close. I'll
break that voice out real fast.
And so where can people find out more about you if they wanted to, you know, explore more about laundromats and all that good stuff?
Yeah. So laundromatresource.com is the platform, Laundromat Resource Podcast. My email is Jordan, J-O-R-D-A-N, at laundromatresource.com.
Boom shakalaka. Jordan, thanks so much for coming on, man. It's been a pleasure having you. And I learned a lot today. I didn't know that much about laundromats. I've explored it for maybe a total of 2 hours of my life. And it's interesting every time I talk to you. So thanks again for piquing the interest, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys. And I want to rematch on the disc golf next time I'm up there.
Do you?
Well, I do. I'm a glutton for punishment. Great. Did we learn nothing from this episode?
Yeah, you love punishment. Yeah, let's go. Maybe I'll chop off one of my legs for you.
Okay. Yeah. You go one-legged, and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, looking forward to seeing you again, Jordan. We'll talk soon.
All right, bye.
All right, see you, man. And that was Jordan Berry. Chad, what do you think of Jordan?
I thought Jordan was awesome. It's amazing just kind of where he started and relates, like you said, not specifically to, you know, buying property per se, but the same concepts and ideas all relate to your first one is going to be a struggle. It's not easy. It's not the roses and sunshine and just passive income from day one. You got to be knocked down and you got to struggle. And then the people that rise up are the successful ones. Without, you know, he didn't give up. So yeah, his story is really cool. I've always been super curious about laundromats, car washes. You know, I think everybody here is like, oh, I want to buy a car wash someday. I have actually always wanted to buy a car wash. I like car washes. So this is helpful.
Yeah. It's funny enough. I was kind of like, I went down that path too. And I don't know why. I was just always nervous that they don't appreciate as much or the clientele is not good. And I think like a lot of your investment is like, do you understand it? Is it relatable? And just personally, like I was blessed and fortunate enough that growing up, like we had in-house laundry and we went through the car wash occasionally, but like not enough for it to make sense. And that's, I think, why, like, just deep down, I know people use them. I see them in there. I've been in laundromats, but like, yeah, I don't know where that kind of goes from. Yeah.
Well, it's all about like your passion too. Like if you're passionate about that, like you can make it work. He mentioned too, there's a multiple different ways to make money in real estate, car washes, laundromats, house hacking, you know, commercial, whatever it might be, but what's your passion is helpful. Because you're invested in it.
That's the big thing for sure.
I like what he said at the end too. We probably couldn't have said it better ourselves, but you're listening to this. There's only so much listening you can do of call us up and take action, right?
Yeah. Stop listening. I mean, you come to a point where you're like, just put the book down. Stop listening to the dang podcast. Just go out and do it, right? Like there's some stuff you're just not going to learn on books and not going to learn in podcasts. And frankly, what I've learned, even in courses, everyone that's going to teach you something, is going to teach you the academic way to learn. And the academic way to learn is everything is beautiful and perfect and lines up just perfectly. And then you kind of get into the real life situation and it's actually not that way. There's actually exceptions you need to make in certain cases. There's a human element involved. A perfect example is like screening tenants, right? I always say like, these are the criteria that you need to do when screening a tenant. And, you know, we're talking credit score and background checks and history and verify two landlords and talk to all the people. But I will admit that there's been many times where I only talk to one landlord. There's been many times where the landlord was the mom, you know, she moved right out of mom and dad's house. So I didn't have a landlord verification and I was okay with that, right? And so like a lot of those times worked out, but sometimes is where it didn't. And so, but that's kind of like the stuff that you just gotta kind of do and learn. And I can't tell you if this tenant is going to be good because I don't know that tenant, but you do. You talk to them. And so use your best judgment on a lot of these things. And there's just a very big difference between like the academic stuff that you're hearing on podcasts and in books and then just actually doing it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. You got to get ingrained. You got to just, some things you just learn by doing. Yep,
exactly. Awesome. Chad. Well, I think it's about that time for us to let everybody go. I'm going to let you go. And yeah, man, it's been a pleasure, as always, kind of hanging out with you. And if you ever need anything, let me know. And if you guys haven't already, please, please, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes and Spotify and wherever else. And you can find me, I'm the Fi Guy, on Instagram, at the Fi Guy. And Chad is?
Rocky the Realtor, R-O-C-K-E, the Realtor.
Boom shakalaka. We'll talk to y'all soon.
See ya.
That's it for this episode of Investify. We hope that these nuggets of real estate wisdom lead to more savvy financial planning and a clearer path towards financial freedom. For more content like this, subscribe to the show at investify.com. Don't forget to leave a rating and share it with your friends. Together, we can transform more real estate newbies into successful and clever investors. Thank you so much for listening. See you on the next one.